go hard on acquiring customers, optimize all of your listings for SEO. And then when you do get customers come through, speak to every single one of them. If you're unknown, how do they find you? What do they like? What are they looking for? And just putting in those hard yards, dialing and, you know, smiling and dialing to make sure you understand exactly what that looks like. And then repeat and bring them back.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. When you guys put reviews of us on Apple and Spotify and other places, I try and make sure we get a chance to give you a little shout out in the episode. So huge thanks to L.A. Duncan from the UK, who put this lovely review on Apple Podcasts, this lovely 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, saying, Chloe is a great host for the show. She asks the questions we all want to know the answers to. I get actionable ideas from listening to this show every week and love that most of the ideas come from businesses in different industries to my own. Thank you, LA Duncan. And yes, it is so cool to learn from people doing things that we're not doing. You learn a lot that way. You have to watch your competitors and learn from them too, but also to learn from other people is always cool. Well, in this episode, I get to catch up with the other half of sock-selling B2B e-commerce powerhouse Bear Kind. We've had Lucy Jeffries on the show a couple of times talking about the Bear Kind journey in both D2C and B2B e-commerce. This time, I'm chatting to her business partner and husband, Andrew, about the lessons he's taken from the recent Spring Fair exhibition in the UK. For international listeners, Spring Fair is a massive stock-finding event for UK retailers. It's one of those shows where those who've created products go along, have a stand, meet with lots of buyers and try and sell their products to them. It's one of those ones, the biggest one in the UK, I would say. And what Andrew's going to be taking us through is what their experience was at Spring Fair this year, their second time going, which is super interesting if you're weighing up what to do, read that this coming year. And a slight sneak preview, Spring Fair wasn't great. They're now doubling down on B2B e-commerce rather than B2B face-to-face trade fairs. So he's also going to be outlining the core pieces of the strategy that's enabled them to massively grow their B2B e-commerce sales over the last 2 years. Please make sure you listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on his top tips, which were awesome, properly geeking out on the carbon one on postage. So you want to hear that. And you'll also get my own take on this episode at the end too. And now to introduce our special guest. Andrew Kemp is the MD at Bear Kind, the animal-saving bamboo sock company. Founded in 2017 and selling via Shopify and Fair, they now do £700,000 a year and sell into 1,000 retailers. Hello, Andrew.
Hey, Chloe. Thank you so much for having me. I feel honoured to be, 500 podcasts. There's not many people that get to that number, so thank you so much for having us.
Just keep belligerently producing them for 10 years and you too can reach these lofty heights. But yeah, it's a big old number. How though did you get into the world of e-commerce? How did you end up working at Bear Kind?
So Lucy, my wife, started the business, in 2017, and it was going fantastically well. We had just been together for probably about a year at that point, and Lucy wanted to change the world, kind of one product at a time. We started with metal straws, plastic t-shirts, recyclable totes, and bamboo socks. And the bamboo socks, in a couple of years down the track, the bamboo socks took off. I was at HSBC, a big bank here in the UK. And, whilst I loved what I was doing, I wanted to have more of an entrepreneurial bent. And we had the family business. So obviously, when your wife is in that business, you do everything you can to help out. And the business just kept growing and growing. And it got to the point where it was clear that it just made a lot of sense for me to jump back in to the business full time. And here I am now running this business with my wife, Lucy.
I cannot imagine anything worse than trying to run a business with my husband. So so I take my hat off to you on that. For anyone who is braver than me, any tips for making it work when you're living and working together? Because I think a lot of people struggle to make that work.
Oh, so many. I mean, we really struggled as well to begin with, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of identity in there, you know, who's doing what, you know, the lap over of roles, who does the team go to? And we had our fair share of struggles in that respect. We actually worked with a performance coach who helped heaps. She sat down with us and split up the role, you know, who's doing what, write that down, show that to the team, get everybody super clear. How do you both work well together? We've actually got an office here, a little kind of YouTube studio. And, you know, we used to be sat, you know, next to each other. We now sit behind each other so we don't see each other. Just kind of small weird tips like that that's helped massively. Kind of you're out of each other's eye line. You feel like you've got your own space and that's helped heaps, but you still kind of can turn around and have a conversation. And then a lot of meetings, you know, we're just getting on the same page with each other. We both want to take the business in slightly different directions, which is the same as saying not the same direction. So just making sure we're on the same page all the time. But I've loved it.
I love that. That's like a little mini masterclass. Anyway, there's your big old checklist, everyone. Andrew's just giving you amazing advice there. Love that. So as I said earlier on in the episode that we've previously had Lucy on and we've talked about your D2C journey. We've talked more recently about the B2B journey because it's been quite an evolution within the business. And you've now reached the really impressive stat of having 1,000 retailers stocking Bearkind socks and managed that in just 2 years. So would it be fair to say that B2B is now the main focus of the business? And also, how did you get there?
Absolutely. It's been incredible growth for us on the B2B side, going from 0 to 1,000 with a relatively new brand, really, all things considered, has come with, you know, I guess a lot of learning opportunities. But what worked really well for us is we jumped headfirst into FAIR. New venture capital backed B2B e-com platform with oodles of money, throwing, you know, that at retailers to try and acquire retailers. And they still are really. I think it's like £150, you know, or plus, you know, $100 maybe in the US, plus free shipping for retailers when they join on, is an incredible incentive. So we just tried to make use of that in as many ways as possible. So we just did the hard yards, finding leads, retailers that we thought could stock our products. And we got really lucky. We were reviewing our customer list, and we saw a bunch of podiatrists were ordering from us. At the time, they were getting 400 pounds of socks. And we thought, this is a bit odd. You know, I wouldn't expect to see Animal Saving Bamboo socks, you know, the best in the country, in their stores. I would expect it to be more medicinal products. But what it turned out was these people would, you know, service-based businesses that wanted to get into products, and we were there to help them. So we reached out to the Royal College of Podiatry. We did a joint email with them, and we pitched our socks to the base. And, you know, I think it was in a couple of days' time, maybe over the course of 3 or 4 days, we'd acquired 300 retailers just by doing that. It sounds a bit kind of growth hacky, but the way that we now describe it to kind of other businesses that are looking to kind of get the same space is, what are the type of businesses that won't yet have your product in particular, and how do you pitch it to them using the crazy amount of money that FAIR's using? So yeah, definitely a B2B focused business, that's for sure.
So I've got so much to unpack in that, Andrew. I love it. The new brand bit, I find the new brand and the marketplace piece, so having FAIR there as the marketplace selling it with their incentives, and then you're a brand new sock brand. I could imagine before FAIR existed and that kind of seal of approval that there's a known third party involved in the transaction, I could see it being an absolute nightmare trying to do B2B e-commerce, and that Bearkind would have forever stayed as a D2C because just, you know, going and knocking on gift shop doors and going, hey, here's some socks. We've already got a sock supplier. Oh, we don't need that. We've already got some animal-based stuff. We're not interested. Would have been an absolute nightmare. Do you think you would have even started on this journey if there hadn't have been the barrier to purchase breaking opportunity that FAIR gave you in terms of trust and in terms of those incentives?
Oh, Absolutely, and more, Chloe, honestly. Even it with where the business is right now, could we turn off FAIR and go to sales agents, kind of like you're describing, distributors, kind of like you're describing, as a more seasoned brand with, you know, a really clear understanding of what is our USPs? I don't think we could. I think you might as well shut it down, because FAIR makes it so easy to go out to those independent niche retailers that there's no way a sales agent could ever work with, because they would just have to cover such an enormous territory. It would never work. So where we work really well is podiatrists, vets, you know, kind of animal-based areas and businesses, zoos, aquariums, all that type of thing. But there's only a handful of those in each county, you know, and sales agents can only cover a couple counties. They could never take our brand on. And, you know, whenever we've tried with sales agents, it just doesn't work, because we've got that, you know, I guess the market's kind of all captured already by the, you know, just that massive long tail that FAIR has enabled us to capture. So, it would hurt if we had to get rid of that.
I think the other interesting thing from your route to success is there's all the benefits of the marketplace, but you're not relying on the marketplace to do your marketing for you. You know, you're not going, we've listed on FAIR and now sales will come, which is on a D2C marketplace, an eBay and Amazon or whatever else, that's what you're expecting, is you list and that brings you the sales. But on the B2B marketplace, FAIR, you are finding the people to email and then telling them about the offer of FAIR. Is that basically it?
Absolutely. You know, it definitely feels like B2B e-commerce is still kind of 10 years plus behind D2C e-com. You've got to still use the organic options that are available. And that is going out, manually finding these people, you know, like Instagram back in the day, follow for a follow was very common. You got massive businesses based off, you know, a million followers. And that was just hard graft by those people posting all the time. And that is still an option on B2B. Obviously, it's going to change quite rapidly, and it already is. FAIR is offering ads. Anchor Store, I don't think they're there yet. Creowait, still a bit organic. So there still is organic reach available to you, and you've got to absolutely make use of that. FAIR has kind of two main big levers they're looking to pull right now, which is just, you know, publicly disclosed. They're looking for more and more retailers, and they're slowing down bringing brands on to the platform. So if you're a brand not on it, get on it as soon as possible. Bring as many retailers as you can to help FAIR achieve that goal of retail. And then number two, of course, where do they make their money? And that's on commission. So be a great business that brings businesses coming back, purchasing all the time. It's just absolutely crucial, and they will push you. The comment you made there, I hear so often from other business owners is, you know, oh, I've kind of listed, yeah, but I've got one or two orders. That's fantastic. You know, that shows real great traction already. But what have you done to really optimize for SEO? We think of FAIR as a demand capture platform rather than a demand generation platform at this point. So really think about the Google SEO type of strategies rather than the Facebook marketing strategies, plus a bit of cold email, and you're going to absolutely fly. And that's what we found every single time, and worked really great for our brand at Bearkind.
There are an increasing number of B2B e-commerce marketplaces out there. Do you play with any of the others, or are you completely focused on FAIR? Would you recommend people finding, you know, multiple ones of them? What's your strategy around that at the moment?
It definitely depends on where your business is based. You know, obviously for the US partners, it's going to be FAIR. UK, it's going to be FAIR. In Europe, it is a slightly different story. Anchor Store, Creowait do have a more of a toehold, but still FAIR is the dominant player. If you'd asked me this a year ago, 2 years ago, I would have said absolutely go into all of them. You're still getting great growth. Now at this point, it does feel like FAIR has kind of won the B2B e-commerce marketplace, at least from us speaking as Bearkind, and what we see the real volume going through as a UK brand selling into the US and Europe. FAIR is by far the winner there. But if you are a European brand, then you've definitely got to still continue can have a look at others in the space. And then if you're an Asian brand, the likes of Peep is coming up quite strong. They're doing okay, but you've really got to have that in-market 3PL or logistics presence to be able to fulfill those orders really quickly without any custom delays. And if you don't have that, then, you know, I definitely recommend just sticking to your home market, which, you know, for listeners of this pod, you know, I'm imagining is more US, more UK businesses. So we're recommending Fair for those businesses.
Nice. So there you go, everybody. It's fairly simple. You don't need to be everywhere. Put your eggs in that one basket and commit to it. It certainly seems like that would be a great move. But Andrew, I could keep diving into this with you for quite a while, but you did message me earlier this very week and say, I'm at Spring Fair. It's mad. Can I come on the podcast and talk to you about it? So, and I told the listeners we were going to talk about this, so we had better talk about it. Yesterday Spring Fair ended. It was your second time with Bearkind at Spring Fair. Tell us about it.
Chalk and cheese kind of feels like the first thing that comes to mind, but it really is an apples to apples comparison because just how much traffic was down. Incredible. We were in the exact same spot as we were last year, and going around to other brands that are selling to these retailers, just the foot traffic was non-existent in comparison to last year. Last year, we couldn't take a break. It was back to back, you know, taking us away from it as a brand specific view. The food court that was behind us was standing room only at lunchtime last year. This year, really empty. Couldn't believe it. You'd be able to get a seat every single time, no matter what time of the day. Last year, we were kind of, you know, the fair would pick up from, say, you know, 9:30 by the time people kind of reached where we were in Spring Fair. This time it was kind of, you know, 10:30 plus when they were reaching us. And that's no change to where we were, how the fair was set up, but just the volume was just way down. So I went for a bit of a walk, had a chat with other brands, asked them what they were seeing. To a T, none of them were up. Some of them were kind of, yeah, similar to last year. Most, if not all, were massively down. We spoke to one brand in particular. I won't tell you who they were. They've been at Spring Fair for 30 years and not going back next year. And you saw, you know, multiple sales reps. These are big brands with spending probably 30, 50 plus K just for those kind of 4 or 5 days to have it stand. That's not even including what they paid to build it, and they're not coming back. You know, sure, you get a chance to speak with your existing clients, but I could spend, you know, all of that money just, you know, peddling around London, having a chat with my clients directly, calling them up. So it was just crazy. Hence why, you know, I sent you that message of just, this is mad. What's happened to, you know, to Spring Fair in comparison?
Were there theories? You know, was there a train strike? I know there wasn't a train strike, but sometimes in Birmingham, it can be that the trains weren't running or something. Because it seems a bit of a weird one that it would be so different year on year. You know, we've all seen, those of us who've been around for a couple of decades, we've all seen shows shrivel up and others take off. And it tends to be a bit more gradual than such a shift. Any theories?
Well, there was apparently a train strike on the Sunday, which obviously isn't great. And then I was hearing, but I don't know exactly which fair there was elsewhere. There was another one up in Harrogate, which kind of split audiences' attention. But Spring Fair has always been the 800-pound gorilla in the room. They used to fill all of the Birmingham NEC, every single hall, and now they must be down to a third, maybe a quarter of the halls. And even then, the halls that they did have, half of them were empty from traders or brands. So absolutely sure there's probably some mitigating factors, but for it to be down as a percentage, I'd be looking at maybe 50% down year on year. In comparison, I think in footfall, it'd be really interesting to see, you know, if they come out with those numbers. But maybe it's just a, you know, specific for that individual show. Maybe you've got all these other mitigating factors. But, you know, suffice to say, even with all of that considered, we won't be going back next year.
So for you, it was like, okay, we've made the effort to get out here, to get up here. We're not getting the business we want. We could have spent 2 days purely working on outreach to drive people to fair, and we've got a lot more bang for our buck.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even when we were there, we were getting more orders on FAIR, the B2B marketing or B2B e-com platform, than we were from FAIR clients. And suffice to say, that's because we do very well on FAIR, the B2B marketplace, but that's zero work, you know, quote unquote, in, you know, compared to sitting there for 5 days, setting up the stand, driving up, driving down, paying for all that acquisition. So absolutely.
Because the, am I right in saying that, because I've never been a brand running a stand at Spring Fair or any of the similar ones that happen. You, at those events, it's not about lead gen, it's about literally getting sales, isn't it? It's getting commitments. The buyers turn up with their order book and their budget in mind, and they make decisions whilst they're at the show and place orders is the way it usually goes.
Yeah, definitely both. Absolutely. There is the nurturing aspect. There is bringing people on the journey. There is, you know, getting the catalogs into the buyer's right hands who are kind of, you know, busy seeing a whole bunch of brands, putting your stall out there, giving them all of your USPs. That's absolutely the case. But if I was to look at in Spring Fair sales year on year, we must be down 60% plus, I would say. And then obviously you don't view Spring Fair based on just the success of that, those couple of days. You know, did you get a chance to speak to those existing retailers? Did you get a chance to speak to the other bigger brands? And then even kind of the white kind of whales out there, you know, the really rare, super large businesses, TK Maxx, John Lewis, you know, these big department stores here in the UK, were they around? And we just didn't see them. Even though we kind of knew those buyers in that space, I didn't see them walk past our stand. No one's coming up for a chat. So then I asked, you know, is that just us? And it doesn't feel like it's just us, going over to other brands as well. And everyone's in that same boat.
I mean, it is, as we said, it is the only the day after. So it's early to be 100% on these stats. But I would have thought you'd also assume that year one to year two, year one's kind of working out how you play, getting a head in the game. So you, I would have thought, all other things being equal, you'd assume year two would be up on year one because you built some brand recognition. You know, you know how to play the game. You're better set up and all the rest of it. So the fact that it's clearly quite heavily down is not a good sign. So for anyone who's thinking of doing trade, you know, physical world trade shows this year, they're a D2C brand creating their own products. They want to build their B2B e-commerce success. Let's say they're an unknown brand because, you know, that's where I would assume the great majority of them are playing. What would your advice be to them based on what you've experienced in the last 2 years and in the last 5 days?
Yeah, what a change over the last 5 days. We were really bullish kind of going into it. Absolutely is to double down, like you said before, on FAIR as a B2B marketplace. Go hard on acquiring customers. Optimize all of your listings for SEO rather than kind of like a product display as you're doing the export from Shopify to FAIR. You know, it's not just about convincing those people that are already on your store. It's convincing those retailers that maybe they don't really understand your brand yet, and make sure that they're getting all of the full information straight away. And then when you do get customers come through, speak to every single one of them. If you're unknown, how do they find you? What do they like? What are they looking for? And just putting in those hard yards, dialing and, you know, smiling and dialing to make sure you understand exactly what that looks like. And then repeat and bring them back. So how can you send them emails, send them messages through FAIR, put in the hard yards? And I think with all of these things, it's an experiment. If it doesn't work for you after 3, 6, 9 months, however much time you're giving it, give it a clear deadline. And if it's not working, or if you don't see, you know, the kind of roots of success, we'll then move on to other platforms. That's worked really well for us. With FAIR, you know, we don't talk about all of the other platforms that didn't go super well for us. FAIR absolutely took off. So it's kind of definitely a survivorship biased. But we did cut the losing experiments quite quickly. So acquire lots, nurture those customers, and then cut the losers. That's what we're recommending to, you know, to young brands that are relatively unknown right now.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and all our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. Andrew, you've already shared tons of advice on B2B e-commerce, but are you ready for the top tips?
I think so. Let's hope. Don't throw any curveballs.
I will try not to. Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
It sounds a bit odd and controversial, but it's actually Tony Blair's biography. We've got a new Labour government here in the UK. There's a new government in the US. So I'm recommending people read that book about what those previous parties did in those, I guess, political spaces, because it has a massive implication on us. Obviously, here in the UK, Labour increased the taxes on employers for a couple of specific taxes, which, to be honest, you could probably read, you know, the Labour manifesto from Tony Blair's biography and realise that the Labour Party only got rid of communism as part of their pitch in 1997. So you'd expect them to go back to kind of those communist roots. Yeah, obviously they're not communists now, but it wasn't until only 27 years ago that they were, you know, said that all production should be in the hand of the government and the people rather than, you know, in the people that are, you know, investing their risk capital into it. So I just thought that was crazy when I, you know, read it and made the connection. Whatever you think of Labour, Conservatives, Republican, Democrats, just find out what, you know, have those parties have done previously and maybe you'll learn something for your business.
I always think it's really fascinating to read, whether it's politics or business or sport, someone who's lived through achieving something pretty impressive and then a few years later is reflecting back on how it all came to pass is always a fascinating biography because they've got that kind of clarity of hindsight, I suppose, to bring into it. Is there an element of that in Blair's biography too?
I would love to know. I don't know exactly when he wrote it. It must have been pretty quick after because he has so much detail and he does reflect. He's very, very self-effacing and very, you know, clear of what he thought worked well and what he didn't think worked well. And you really just kind of get a view of just how much of a clear shooter this person was. You know, he just kind of told it how it was. He, you know, talks about, you know, the time he spent with the Queen. You know, you wouldn't expect someone to talk about that. And that's just crazy to get that level of, you know, candid view of into a world that I'm never going to get. So, no, I loved it.
Cool. Okay. Traffic top tip then. Which marketing method do either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
For us, I mean, we kind of touched on it a little bit already in this call. It's just that view on demand capture versus demand gen for B2B businesses. And you captured it perfectly by saying, oh, I'm on fair, but I've not really done too much with it. And doing something with it, I've seen so many brands go absolutely crazy. There's one brand in particular that's going to go onto Dragon's Den actually tonight. They sell an animal type of product and they're absolutely smashing it on fair. And every single time I hear of someone putting the work in onto these platforms that are relatively new and haven't got really sophisticated SEO, ad targeting, just putting in the work, you can do really great. So yeah, just think about demand gen and SEO on fair, the B2B marketplace.
Quick for the audience, if you're in America, Dragon's Den is Shark Tank. For anyone in the UK who wants to catch up and try and work out who we're referencing here, 6th of February is when we're recording this. So you want to go to the 6th of February episode of Dragon's Den. But what I thought was really interesting there is that it almost doesn't matter what your demand gen or your demand capture thing is. It's understanding its role. Do you know what I mean? It's like, are we doing this activity for capture or creation? Are we doing this for capture or creation? If you understand the roles, you're all right. I mean, so long as the role does fit, you know, if you go with, you know, we're doing LinkedIn for demand capture, then you're wrong. But, you know, it's understanding which of those comes together is the key thing and understand, I guess it's strategic decisions around your channels and your activity.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is really as simple as you could probably just Google what is demand capture, what is demand gen, and what is works best for each platform. Naturally, there are going to be elements. I'm sure someone, you know, sitting here thinking, oh, well, you know, you can do demand gen on Google through YouTube and all that sort of stuff. But just thinking about it from a platform by platform perspective is going to get you 95% of the results. And sure, there's the optimizations around the side, but just, I think it's really underappreciated. And also for new brands, where are you going to get your clients? You can't invest in every single channel. It's never going to go anywhere. But, you know, maybe you can just absolutely dominate LinkedIn if you're a suit business, like, you know, kind of Supply London have done with those guys doing their new suits. So perfect example.
Okay, the tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
I don't know if you've had him on. Do you know Sam Wright from Macaroni and Blink?
We have had. I can't remember if it was this podcast or the other podcast, but yes, I know Sam, and he's definitely been on.
I think probably the smartest guy I've ever met when it comes to SEO, and the clearest and easiest app I can speak to in the past probably 12 months that have made us money is the Macaroni SEO app. You basically just like click through it, install it onto your Shopify, have a chat with the guys and girls, and it is seriously just as simple as accept, 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 accept. And you just read, okay, do I want to link yellow socks to my bees? Do I want to link my bees to the internal page talking about the bee charity? And it's that all of that work that just takes so much time, where they've got some type of AI thing in the background, and all I need to do is click and it adds the URL. So my internal linking has increased by 1,000. My mega menu is up by 100. My, you know, I think it's like a 6 deviation increase in my internal views and traffic and revenue on my website just by capturing that demand that I've got by having a relatively large product catalog. It just made us so much money over Christmas. So yeah, Macaroni SEO.
There we go. We will have to let Sam know the very big plug you've just given him and his software. But given those numbers, clearly working. Okay, the carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
The big one for us, working with our guys and girls in Sprint Logistics, that our warehouse, is moving to Royal Mail large letter 48. And in the UK, there's different, like, you know, I guess, what do they call them? Dimensions that you can work with for your business, and working out and optimizing exactly what that dimension is. It saved us a heap of money, but it also saved us a heap of carbon by not sending air. And we were sending a lot of air previously. We were using Royal Mail parcel. We were using these bigger boxes. There was heaps of space in them. And then we discovered this. This is such a nerd thing. The Maltese C4 Cross, which is the ultimate in Royal Mail large letter options. It gets you all of the dimensions. You ship way less air, and you only ship using Royal Mail. So it will save you carbon, and it will also save you money, which was a massive win for us. Shout out Natasha from Sprint Logistics, who, you know, spent years and years in a packaging and now is in logistics. She was like, just why don't you use this? Instantly saved us, you know, thousands on, you know, a couple thousand orders. So amazing.
Oh, I could geek out on that. Do you know, relatively little known fact, I was in the Royal Mail consultation meeting when they were working out and doing the research, moving to what was called at the time PIP, pricing by proportion, or pricing in proportion, because I worked in catalogues at the time. So I was sat behind the team from Clinton's Cards as the representative of past times, going, this is mad. I can't believe I'm in this town hall meeting. Wow. But yeah, the Royal Mail large letter size is a postage option of beauty for those who can get into it, whether you are sending sending catalogs or sending products. So much cheaper than small parcels. So much cheaper. And obviously the carbon impact as well, because you're packaging smaller and therefore you are shipping less, which is very cool. Love that one. Thank you for letting me geek out, Andrew. Super appreciate that.
A fellow packaging nerd. What a story.
Yeah. Postage nerd, proper postage nerd back in the day. Bit rusty these days, but I still have the love for the large letter format. All right. No one needs to hear me talking about this though. So Andrew, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media, please? Where can we find Bear Kind?
Yeah, so you can find Bear Kind at www.bearkind.com. We're all over the world, ship everywhere. We're just trying to save the world's animals one sock at a time. And if you want to try and grow your fair presence, we've just started up a small little YouTube channel where we're just trying to share all of that top tips that we're trying to give everyone on YouTube. Just search Candid Founders and Fair and you'll find us. The main thing for us is we think that it's incredibly powerful for us to donate 10% of our profits from the sock to the animal in the sock. And we're trying to encourage all businesses to donate 10% of their profits to a good cause that makes sense for their business. So yeah, hence why we started this little YouTube channel, and it's just a lot of fun. So we can encourage people there. That'd be amazing. Thank you.
Awesome. So that's the Candid Founders YouTube channel if they want, because like we've spent, 30 minutes talking about a bit of the B2B e-commerce strategy that you follow, but you share a huge amount of it very candidly, to put a pun in on that YouTube channel, don't you?
Exactly. And thankfully, you've got me here on radio or podcast, but you've got my lovely wife who's got a face for TV or YouTube. So you can listen to her dulcet tones rather than mine just as much on the YouTube.
There we go, everybody. Loads of advice for you to get tapped into there. Andrew, thank you so much for reaching out and suggesting this as a podcast episode, because I know a huge number of our listeners are working on the B2B e-commerce side of things and trying to work out how to make it play. And simplification and persistence seems to be the two big watchwords here. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Amazing show. Thanks, Chloe.
So there you go, a lovely, juicy playbook on how to quickly grow. Because I think 1,000 retailers in 2 years is pretty quick, pretty serious success in the B2B e-commerce space. And what I really love about Andrew's approach and the Bearkind approach is they've tested other channels as well, but they have found they've got their growth, they've got a system that works on Fair, F-A-I-R-E, if you're wondering how we spell it. And that is really working for them. And I also like the fact Andrew's talking, you know, this is what Fair are looking for at the moment. This is where Fair are focused. So he understands what his tech marketplace partner are after, and they are leveraging that as much as they can. And it's often the case with these big marketplaces. If you know what game they're playing, a bit like he was saying about the books, in the book top tip, then you can work out how to get the most of that out for you. So really cool to talk to Andrew there, and very cool to get his take on what's just been happening at Spring Fair here in the UK. Would love to hear if you're finding similar things at the other events in the UK or around the world. Is that shift into online buying and non-fair buying happening in the product space? Okay. You can get our notes from this show, the links and more, including the top tips and links through to whatever the latest fair deal is. You will find all of that at ecommercemasterplan.com. You can use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/ the number of this episode, which should be almost certainly 530. So ecmp.info/530 for this one. Put that in the URL bar and you'll go straight to the right page on the website. On the website, you can get yourself added to our email list, so you get all the juicy stuff we share to help you improve your business. And if you like this episode and you liked hearing from a retailer with something they really wanted to talk about, and you work for an e-commerce store and you're thinking there's a hot topic you'd really like to come on the show and update everyone about, then I would love to hear about it. Tell me what you want to come on the show and talk about. The easiest way to do that is via ecmp.info/guest, where you'll find our guest application form. Or if you're a brand, not a supplier side, if you're a brand, then do feel free to DM me on LinkedIn and let me know what you would like to come on and talk about, just like Andrew did a couple of days before we recorded this one. So I bring you a new interview on this show every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including becoming more sustainable. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I hope you have a brilliant week, and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.